Now on News Talk, continuing our season of documentary on News Talk, producer JJ O'Shea looks at the fieldwork of Jim Carroll and Pat McKenzie, who recorded the vestiges of a unique way of life before it disappeared forever, in Rambling Candyman.
We are the travelling people like the pigs or beak or folk. The men in Whitehall thinks we're parasites, but tinker is the word with our gum shellacular law. Move us on you by alls.
The role of the outsider has a long and noble history in the annals of music, song and folklore collecting. The outsider brings fresh eyes and ears and sees the value in everyday matters that a local may take for granted or even consider mundane. The English scholar Robin Flower and his work on the Blasket Islands springs to mind, and Carl von Sydow from Sweden and Reidar Christiansen from Norway, both of whom collected in Ireland in the early 20th century, and both of whom inspired the founders of the Irish Folklore Commission. And to these illustrious names should be added Jim Carroll and Pat McKenzie, who recorded an abundance of wonderful material, traditional songs, stories and life histories from Irish travellers living in England. And by recording this material, they saved it for future generations, just before it was about to disappear forever. And what's maybe more exceptional is that Jim and Pat weren't academics or scholars working in the field of folklore. They recorded the material in their own free time and at their own expense. They were simply enthusiasts with a passion for traditional song. They'd been energised by their encounter with Ewan McColl. They were members of McColl's Critics Group in London, which was a workshop for people interested in learning traditional song. But it was a radio programme in 1973 that helped kickstart their project. Pat McKenzie.
We knew about this book that's been published, Gypsies, by Jeremy Sandford, and we just inadvertently heard a radio programme one Sunday reviewing it. And there was an interview with a traveller, Pops Johnny Connors, who had actually contributed a chapter to it. And we found out that he was living on a site, in a caravan, on a site at Shepherd's Bush, which was, I don't know, about 3 miles from where we lived. So it was Jim's idea. He said, let's go and find him.
We went along and Pops Johnny sort of virtually dragged us in. He was absolutely, completely welcoming. He was very, he was an incredibly impressive person. He could sort of subjugate you with a few words. But he brought us in. He sang for us. And then he talked at length. He had a tremendous amount to say. He had this wonderful thing, the ballad Edward, where a brother kills another brother, a very early child ballad, the ballad of Edward. One brother kills another brother, comes home with blood on his shirt, and his mother questions him, and it turns out that he confesses what he's done, and he's exiled, he leaves. And he said, it's the same as the biblical story. Cain slew Abel and was exiled out, he says. And he said, and that's how the travellers first took to the road. It's the big traveller origins myth. And you had this sort of centuries-old ballad, which he still related to in this very basic way, when he sang it. And it really, through talking to Johnny, that you realise that the songs had an importance to the singers and the community.
All the jobs in the world we have done, from making Pharaoh's coffins to building Birmingham, with our gum shillacalashilla, wallop it out, you heroes. We have mended pots and kittens.
And through Pop's journey, Jim and Pat were introduced to other travellers.
We were known as the students, which from our point of view was an excellent description. But it was related to the fact that in the 1960s, the travellers in England were fighting for the right to stop somewhere. and that their most avid supporters were students from the colleges and universities who threw their weight behind the travellers and helped them to fight for sites. We used to go onto the site and they would say, "Are you the police? Are you the social workers?" And when we said, "No, yeah, you must be the students."
The discovery that there were thousands of Irish travellers living in the London area was a revelation.
We had no idea. We'd lived there and we'd never, ever seen them. It really was. They were there. They were behind. There were no official sites, not really. They were all pull-ons, you know. And it was a total education. And the important decision I think we took after, really after 6 weeks of recording, we were getting a tremendous amount of stuff. And we realised that if we were going to make sense of what we were doing, we were going to have to restrict our work to people and stay with them until we felt we'd reached the point where we were repeating stuff and then move on, rather than go in, get the top songs and go elsewhere. And that was the big revelation for us. You know, you stay with the singer and you start, they fill in the gaps for you.
We can sing a song or dance a reel, no matter where we roam. We have learned the Emperor Nero how to play the pipes way back in the days of Rome. With our gum, shilla, kalale, shilla, whack it if you can, me boy. Oh, sigh, right, la, di, da, out, little, da, gliddy, da, gliddy, gliddy, da, gliddy, da.
They were quick to see the value in being outsiders.
You have this romantic idea that you're accepted. Well, you're not. You are always an outsider in any community working, whether it's West Clare or Travellers or Norfolk or wherever we were. We're outside. And I came to the conclusion that that was not just a fact of life. It was essential. They would tell you, travellers particular, would tell you, go out of their way to tell you something because you were an outsider, that if they were talking to another traveller, they wouldn't bother because that was part of their daily life. And that's what we were getting from travellers all the time.
The recordings were made in situ and not under ideal conditions. The sounds of trains, cars and children often intrude. But the recordings also carry the atmosphere of the location.
I remember recording one of our singers, Andy Cash, in a crowded caravan one wet afternoon with six children crammed into it. And Andy was carrying a dog. And he got so very excited with the song he was singing, he began to squeeze the dog. And the dog let out this enormous howl. It was that situation all the time. You were working really on the top, from the top of your head all the time. But it was easy. And they were incredibly accommodating. They really were, you know, they would hush the kids. And we record in a caravan with half a dozen kids sort of sleeping around, you know.
One of the songs that Andy Cash sang was The Half Crown. The title refers to a children's allowance of a half crown that was introduced by Eamon de Valera in the 1930s for each newborn child. The song celebrates, how shall I put it, the preliminary exercise required in order to earn that half crown.
Here I am, an old widow, I'm fed up alive. 4 year I'm out looking for an old wife, and I'm married as a widow but not settled down. And I'll do my endeavours to make a half crown. The population of Irians is now getting small. When young De Valera steps in from the Don, and the laws that he passed and he's now left him down. For every child born, he'd give a half crown. The first night we started were nearly stone dead.
The next night we broke down the springs at old bed and begotten she. And for I'm 63 and begotten Susie, that's no half crown for me. I woke the other night between midnight and dream. What did I hear but a young baby scream? And wee wife, she shouts out, get a bottle, you clown. For little you knew, you would make a half crown. For now I resemble a half-hungry goose. Every bone in me body and joint, it is loose. And the neighbours all laugh and they call me a clown. It's the cause of your death, that old bloomin' half-crown.
One of the travellers with whom Jim and Pat became especially close and from whom they collected a great deal of material was Mykin McCarthy.
He was born in 1929 in Castlevaine in Kerry, on the Fair Green. He made a great point of that. He was very delighted he was born on the Fair Green. And it was around Kerry that he travelled mostly.
His father was a storyteller, musician, singer, and he had his father's stories. He took an interest and he made a living out of selling the songs as well on the ballads.
One of the songs that Mykin's father sang was an old Elizabethan ballad called The Blind Beggar.
Well, around where my father came from, like, he was very well known as being a singer, not a singer now for his living, like, but a fireside singer, we call it, or what we call Kaelian out, going to houses. Well, they were very fond of that song where he came from. He'd be like the young people today singing Blind Beggar records. It got that popular around that area, travelled like from parish to parish then. Where he got it from, I do not know. But so, when I used to be selling the ballads then, like, and my mother, they used to ask me, have you any of your father's songs, you know, if I went into where we were here now. Have you the Blind Beggar? And I would say, no. And why don't you get those printed, I'd say. Those are the songs you'd sell. And if you get them printed, I'll buy a dozen of them off you next time I meet you. So that's how I got them in printing myself. My father write them out for me, and I go into the printing office then, and I get them printed. But they were the songs I did sing. And many a time after, I went at the pubs after selling ballads, like, and things like that. And I'd hear all the lads inside the fair there, and I was saying, math kids and meetings. Well, when they'd have a few pints on them, till then you hear all the, my songs sung back again out of my ballads. But I remember one day, I was in the store fair, and I was selling ballads anyway. So I goes into a pub. I was 15 years of age just then. Actually, I never wanted to pack it up. It was a shame that the ladies I got. You know, but there was an American inside, and he wasn't back to Ireland, I'd say, for 30 years or something, he was saying. So I sang that song now, The Blind Beggar. And he asked me to sing it again, and every time I sang it, he stuck a pound out in my top pocket. He said, will you sing again? So the pub was full along, like what we call a nook to know that time. A small bar, a private little bar, off from the rest of the pub. And will you sing it again? I was delighted again, of course, another pound into my pocket every time anyway. And the crowd that was around, of course, they were all turning two bob a piece and a shilling a piece. And I had this pocket packed with silver money as well. So he asked me, will you sing it for the last time? So I'll keep singing till morning if you want. I had 6 single pound notes in it when I came outside the pub. I think I sold the rest of the ballads for half nothing to get away the pictures.
Initially, the idea had been just to record the songs, but in time, the project broadened in scope.
We started off with the songs, and then all of a sudden we're recording the history of travellers in rural, mainly Kerry and West Cork. And we got masses of that from them because it's a part of their life. Mykin was a tinsmith. His father was a tinsmith. And they gave us loads and loads of descriptions of their life, their trades. Well, Mykin, when we interviewed Mykin and we asked him what jobs he'd done, he took 5 minutes to list them, all the different jobs he'd done. it was a remarkable experience for us to sort of get this sort of stuff.
Although traditional singing was in decline within the travelling community in the 1970s, it was in better condition than within the settled communities. And several ancient ballads were still a part of the traveller's repertoire. Actually, what's understood by that word ballad has changed over time. A ballad, in the original sense of the word, is a song that tells a story.
And that is the important thing as far as I'm concerned, because we all like stories and everybody has stories in their heads, and it makes sense to think of them in that way. And we have asked a number of singers that we recorded, what is more important, the story or the air? And they've all said the story. It is the story that carries it forward. And if you get a song that is just lyrical and sentimental or talks about pretty things, that is not a ballad. The ballad has a beginning and an end, and it has stories all the way through. It's a very misused word, I think.
One of the singers who had several of the ancient ballads was Mary Delaney. Mary was from Tipperary and she was blind from birth. She was the mother of 16 children and she had an enormous repertoire of song that included more recent genres such as country and western, but she always expressed a preference for what she called the old songs.
What have you for your dinner now, my own darling boy? What have you for your dinner? I had bread, beef, and coal pies in. Mother, will you dress my bed soon? I have a pin in my heart, and I'd long to lie down.
We were recording Mary in various sites, in caravans all over the place. And she'd sung this ballad, Buried in Kilkenny, to us a number of times. And she told us that she called it a heavy song. And I think what she meant that it was a song that she would get too involved with. She was great at comic songs because she would burst out laughing and she couldn't finish them, you know. At one stage, she moved into a flat in just Camden Town because she thought her children should get an education, which was very difficult when they were being pushed from pillar to post on the sites and being moved on. So she went into this flat and we visited her there. And it was pretty dire. It was completely empty. So, I mean, we gave her some bits of furniture, carpets and things. But then, see, on a traveller's site, there are a number of caravans. People are in and out all day long. And as far as Mary was concerned, as a blind woman, it was company. They were in and out, people talking, carrying on their business. She was suddenly in this empty flat. Children had gone off to school. She was completely on her own, a blind woman, in this dreadful flat. And we were recording her there, and we did ask her to sing Buried in Kilkenny again. And it was just heartrending because she seemed to pour out all her misery, all her feelings. And it was just, you can feel the passion, the intense feeling that she had about this song in this sort of echoing in this empty flat was really knocked us back.
Whilst will you leave your children me wander and by? Whilst will you leave your children my comfort and joy? I let them follow their mother. Will you dress my bed soon? I've a pain in my heart and I long to lie down. Then where will you be buried now, my own darling boy? Where will you be buried, my comfort and joy? I'll be buried in Kilkenny, where I'll take a long sleep, put a stone to my head and a scratch to my feet.
Some of the themes are global. Songs and stories travel. The motifs in this story, told here by Mikey McCarthy and set in this version in West Kerry, have also been found in Scots and English ballads, as well as in old tales from Venice and even India.
There was a brother and sister one time, they were back in the West of Kerry altogether, on a very remote place altogether. So the water was that far away from them that they used to always be grumbling and grousing the two of them, no, which may go for the water. So they'd always come to the decision anyway that they'd have their little couple of verses, and whoever stopped first, they'd have to go for the water. So they'd sit at both sides of the fire, and there was two little hobs at times, there'd be no chairs, and they had two hobs, and one would be sitting on one side and the other side, and maybe Jackie would do the engine, you know. That's what they was called, a little clay pipe to. And Jackie said, oh, hum, dum, de dee, lo, de do, rum, de, rex, fal, de vo, de lean, de vo, vo, vee. So now to go over to Mary. Odin him, myrn, odin am the roo, ray, ray, rex, fal, de vo, de lean, de vo, vo, vee. So back to Jack again. Odin him, myrn, odin am the roo, ray, ray, rex, fal, de vo, de lean, de vo, vo, vee. So to keep on like that, maybe from the start from morning, maybe until night. And whoever stopped, he'd have to go for the water. So there was an old man from Tralee anyway, and he was driving a horse and sidecar. They'd be calling it a taxi now. He'd come on with his horse and sidecar from maybe from a railway station or someplace, and they'd hire him to drive him back to the West of Dingle. So he lost his way anyway. So it was the only house now for another 4 or 5 miles. So in he goes anyway to inquire first what he'd to take anyway. And when he landed inside the door, he said, how do I get to Ballyferriter from here? And Mary said, Odin him, Myrn, Odin, am the roo, ray, ray, rikes, fall, the vod, lean, the vod, vod, vee. So over he went. He said, what's wrong with that one? She must be mad or something. And over to the old man. He said, how do I get to Ballyferriter from here? Odin him, Myrn, Odin, am the roo, ray, ray, rikes, fall, the vod, lean, the vod, vod, vee. So he just finished the verse and he go back over to Mary, and he was getting the same results off of Mary. Back to Jack. So the old man, he couldn't take a chance to go off without getting the information where the place was. So he catches a hold of Mary and starts tearing Mary around the place. Show me the road to Ballyferriter. He's going to shake her and push her and pull her and everything. Odin him, Myrn, Odin, am the roo, ray, ray, rikes, fall, the vod, lean, the vo, vo, vee. And he kept pulling her and tearing her around the place. And he poking her and everything. Oh, Jack, she will have saved me. I will, Mary, he said, but you'll have to go for the water now.
You're listening to Rambling Candyman on News Talk 106 to 108.
But the day that I left Ireland, sure things were very slack. I rambled over to Glasgow and I'm wishing to get back. I was gathered in owl pot metal, and more times bones and rags. Sure, all the little different things I'd put into different bags, to see all the little kiddies with a bone stuck in their hand, and inquiring for Johnny Connors. He is a rambling candy man.
The song Rambling Candyman, written by Rich Johnny Connors, tells of his experience when he first crossed over from Ireland to Scotland.
They were making songs all the time. They made songs about dodgy horses. They made songs about selling stuff. It was off-the-cuff stuff.
An old man come to me one day, thought I was rather green. Down in the corner of Essex, there were bricks you could plainly see. Sure, I says, old man, take up your sack. Sure, I'm not in the game. You can't handle bricks or martyr to any rambling candy man.
I could keep going and going without a bit. You know what I mean? It's all ashes on your bit. That's not it now. I ain't met up that bit. Well, it did happen, really. Yeah, that's the one when we come over first. We pulled in and things were going bad. Like, we pulled in this bit of waste ground. And this old man, he come up to us and he thought that we were ill. Like, you know, they would buy anything. But suppose the man wanted a drink or something, like, you know, probably he had his own problem as well as us. Yeah.
But things were changing. Television culture hadn't really made inroads on the traveller lifestyle in London prior to the mid-1970s, and certainly not in the way it had dominated cultural life in the settled communities. But the arrival of the battery-powered portable television was about to change that. Jim Carroll and Pat McKenzie had taken a break for several months to assess and document their recordings.
And when we went back about 18 months later, we were rather horrified to see that all the caravans on the site had little blue lights coming through, and everybody had bought a portable television. I mean, prior to that, they weren't really available. This was in the 70s, so at that stage, suddenly they became available in your ordinary shops. And we used to go into a trailer and we'd have to wait till some John Wayne film was finished, you know, whereas before we could just sit and talk, but it really did change then. And I think what has happened since is that was one of the first changes. The second big change that I think happened was that most of the travellers we were recording had come from rural backgrounds in Ireland, but they'd moved over to the UK and they were living in towns. The whole way of looking at things seemed to change with the travellers. They got very influenced by the urban ways. I mean, they had to, if you like. They had to fit in. So the sitting and talking and singing after coming back from the pub, that had all gone. And Mike Keane said to us one day, he said, the old people are feeling very lonely now because the youngsters don't want to know. They won't want to talk.
We have mended pots and kettles and buckets for Lord Cornwall, but before we would leave his house, me lads, we would mind his woman and all. It's all gum shillacula, wallop it out, me hero. Well, I have a little woman and a mother she is to be. She gets her basket and her arm and mooches the hills on me. It's all gum shillacula, wallop it out, me hero.
Around the same time that Jim Carroll and Pat McKenzie began making their recordings with Irish travellers in London, they'd also begun recording in Clare. In fact, they eventually moved over to Clare. Well, Clare is well known for its musical heritage. It's one of its defining features, I think you could say. But Clare also possesses a strong song tradition, and Jim and Pat had been alerted to this by some friends. They first came over in 1973 and they camped along with their recording gear in Spanish Point. And one of the first sessions they found there was in Quilty, where the fiddle player Junior Crean was playing.
And Junior came over to us in the interval or at the end and said, "I can see you're interested. If you like to come down to the Crosses of Anna, the pub down the road, on Tuesday, I'll give you a few tunes." And, you know, we were staggered by this because we were complete strangers. It was our first time in the area. But anyway, we went along to the Crosses and we spent a wonderful evening with Junior and some of his friends, including John Joe Healy, whom we later got to know very well. And Junior played tunes, he sang songs, he told stories, and he talked all evening. We just had the tape recorder running and running and running. Anyway, the next year we decided we'd come to the Willie Clancy Summer School, which we did in the July. And it was there that we met Tom Munnerly and his family. And the thing was, we'd heard about Tom, we knew about him, and he'd heard about us, mainly, I think, through our visit here, but also we'd heard of us in London, you know. And Tom was very good to us at that time, and he took us around with him. He was doing recording of singers, and during the week he and Annette used to rent a house for a few weeks in the summer, and he took us around then and introduced us to, I don't know, half a dozen different singers, and we went with him and recorded. And after that, we came annually and we recorded the same singers and more. And we got to know people like Tom Lenehan and Martin Reedy really well.
In England, the singing of traditional songs had all but died out. So Jim and Pat were amazed to discover a vibrant and still living tradition in Clare.
And what we got by the time we came over in the 70s were people like Tom Lenehan, who had spent a lifetime within a living tradition. Now, sometimes he was remembering songs he hadn't sung for 20, 30, 40 years. But he had that. He had this first-hand knowledge of this stuff. And this is what we were getting from Clare. This was what made it so important. And also, all the singers realised that the songs they had were important and should be saved. And we got this. We got this sort of drive to pass the songs on, to make sure that they didn't die.
A case in point was the singer Martin Howley from Finor in North Clare.
We had recorded him, I think, only once, a couple of times. And then we came back one year and we were told he was very ill. He had been ill. We went up to see him and we were talking away and he said, "Have you got a tape recorder with you?" I said, "No, Martin, you've been ill, you know, we've just come to talk to you." And he said, "No," he said, "I want you to." He said, "I'm a poor man. The songs are all I have to leave. I want you to have them."
Several of the songs they were discovering opened a window onto historical events.
Well, this was a thing that became very clear to us in Clare, was how much the songs tied up with the history of Ireland and of the community, of the town and the area.
The song, known as Patrick Sheehan, written by Charles Kickham in 1857, is a typical example, and it tells a true story.
Related to a veteran in the Crimean War who was blinded at Sebastopol, and his pension was withdrawn. He was forced to beg on the street, and that song, Kickham wrote that deliberately, as a campaigning piece against recruitment. Against people joining the British Army. This is what they'll do to you.
"My name is Patrick Sheehan, and my years are 34. Tipperary is my native place, not far from Galtymore. I've come of honest parents, but now they're lying low, and many the happy day I spent in the glen of Arlaw. My father died, I closed his eyes outside our cabin door. The landlord and the sheriff too were dead the day before. And then my loving mother and sisters three also were forced to go with broken hearts from the glen of Arlaw. For 3 long months in search of work I wandered far and near. I went into the poorhouse to see my mother dear. The news I heard nigh broke my heart, but still in all my woe I blessed the friends who made her graves in the glen of Arlaw. Bereft of home, of kith and kin, and plenty all around, I starved within my cabin, I slept upon the ground. But cruel as my lot was, I ne'er did hardship know, till I joined the English army far away from Arlaw. Rise up, says the corporal, you lazy Irish hound. Why don't you hear, you sleepy dog, the call to arms sound? Alas, I had been dreaming of days long, long ago. I awoke before the best of all and not in Arlaw. I groped to find my musket, how dark I thought the night. Oh, blessed God, it is not dark, it is the broad daylight. And when I found that I was blind, my tears began to flow. I longed for even a pauper's grave in the glen of Arlaw. Oh, blessed Virgin Mary, mine is a mournful tale. A poor blind prisoner here I am in Dublin's dreary jail. Struck blind within the trenches where I never feared the foe. And now I'll never see again my own sweet Arlaw. A poor neglected mendicant, I wander through the streets. My 9 months' pension now been out, I beg from all I meet. As I join my country's tyrants, my face I'll never show among the kind old neighbours in the glen of Arlaw. Now, Irish youths, dear countrymen, take heed of what I say. For if you join the English ranks, you'll surely rue the day. And if ever you are tempted a soldiering to go, remember poor blind Sheehan from the glen of Arlaw.
But a number of the songs were sort of subjects, serious subjects, treated comically. One of the I think it's the only version we've ever come across, is one called The Quilty Burning. During the War of Independence, there was a campaign against the RIC, basically. What they used to do is they would pile oily rags up against the front door of the barracks and set fire to it. And no great arson attack, just a protest fire. And there was this song made about an event in Quilty. Nobody can even remember the incident now, but It's recorded in that song. That song survived in the mouth of one man who was a clear man we met in London, who left here in the 40s and he was living in London. And that is the only... Now, one of the other things we found about that, one of the other important things about that song in particular, was Mikey described the song being made. He said, four lads, just after the burning took place, four lads, local lads, stood on the crossroads at Quilty, threw verses at one another. They stood there sort of singing, making up verses until they had a whole song. And Mikey remembered that song from that making up of the song. Now, that's, you know, a folk song being remembered in its being, in its manufacture, is quite something.
Oh, the burning at Quilty, you all know it well. When the barrack took fire for the peeler, the dwell. The flame bursted out, sure it was a great sight. There were women and children out there all night. Michael the wire shoot, he got a great fright. He called on his wife for to rescue his life. He daughter ran out and she roared, no, oh, blessed light, keep away from our door. Then McCoy Kenny looked out to the glass and he saw Patsy Scully outside at the cross. Oh, Patsy, take out the poor ass, for the whole blessed place, it is all in a mess. Michael the wire, he came down in the scene. He ran down to the cross and called up Jack O'Neill. My house will be burned before it'll be seen, and my fool of a son is above and raining. Then Paddy Shannon thrown out his old rags. He stuck his poor missus into the bag. The burning, they started too soon. To be burning all night until next afternoon. Then Paddy Haley came out on the flame. He could see nobody there but the peelers he'd blame. He went into Tom Clancy and told him the same. By damn, said Tom Clancy, said, no, we won't rain. Father McGannon came down to the gate. He said to the boy, did an awful disgrace. For this old barrack is an awful state. It's no harm to be banished and gone out the place. Now to conclude and to finish my song, I hope you'll all tell me my verses is wrong. For this old barrack is no harm to be gone. For money the poor fellow was shoved in the wrong. I suppose there was no...
For Jim and Pat, it's vital that their work and the work of other collectors is archived and made easily available to people.
We did the deal with all of these singers. We went to them and said, look, if you don't sing them, if you don't put them down, record them, they will die. And lots of them had this attitude anyway to start with, and we have sort of become quite convinced that this is such an important body of stuff, not just our collection, but there is masses of stuff swilling around this country which needs to be got together, needs to be assessed, needs to be put somewhere that it's not going to disappear, or it's not going to be locked away in a cupboard.
Of course, modern technology offers new opportunities for both archiving and making material available in an easily accessible way. Clare County Library took the Clare recordings in hand.
It was a dream for us when we went into the County Library and just handed it, said, look, we've got this body of songs we've collected here. Are you interested? And we just dumped it on their desk and then two people there, Maureen Comer and Anthony Edwards, jumped at it. They worked for nearly 3 years at it and put it in, I think, a great form. It was lovely, accessible, that website that they built on it.
It was very fortunate that Maureen and Anthony were able to see the value in the material.
The range of people that sing them and the range of the subjects taught in the songs... some of them are historical, like there's one describing, a few describing the Iranian ambush, kind of local things that happened during the War of Independence, the land war. You have love songs, you have songs of revenge. The amount of singers, and most of them are actually from a very small area around Mullagh, Quilty and Milltown. The amount of singers that emerge from one small area is just fantastic. It's incredible.
Basically, people like Jim and Pat, they have enthusiasm for collecting the actual authentic culture of a place like West Clare. And on our part in the library, we have a kind of a mission really to make things like that available. So the two things kind of came together really as far as we're concerned. It was fantastic that they had the generosity and the kind of the foresight to give us all of their data without any strings attached, trust us with it, and have the confidence in us that we could actually produce something that would be worthy of their collection. So we kind of took that pretty seriously, and we wanted to do justice to their collection. And because the whole basis of public library service really is to make information accessible to everybody all of the time at no charge.
That has meant that we've been able to give the Clare people the songs that they gave us all those years ago.
Farewell, you groves and shady hills, where oftentimes I strayed. Farewell, you brooks and sparkling rills, beside whose banks I played. For seen so grand no other land can with this spot compare. Oh, so blessed be the pastures green that deck the hills of Clare.
Rambling Candyman was produced by JJ O'Shea and was supported by a grant from the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland as part of the Sound and Vision Scheme.